This is the smell of a warm 3-day-old egg salad sandwich in a wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, wimpy, wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a hefty, ultra-strong trash bag with new Fabuloso lemon scent.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Smell the difference? When life gives you stinky, get Hefty Ultra Strong with new Fabuloso lemon scent. It smells like clean, freshly picked lemons. So no matter what's inside your trash, you can stop the stink and smell the lemon.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Fellow fiends, welcome to another terrifying and delectable episode of Nightmare on Film Street, the horror podcast with zero credibility, but all of the blood, ghouls, and gore your puny heart can handle. Let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to Nightmare on Film Street. I'm Kim.
I'm John.
And this week we are talking Nazi zombies.
That's right. This week's episode is rated Z.
Yes, in companion to Overlord, which came out last week, we paired up some Nazi zombie horrors for you. And if you've been among those that have been bugging us for a really long time to do a zombie episode, this one is for you. And with a little Nazi flair, I guess.
There are some great zombie movies out there. There's no denying that. It's just not our immediate go-to.
Yeah, I mean, and if you've been waiting for the Dawn of the Dead episode or the Night of the Living Dead episode, well, you're going to have to keep fucking waiting.
I'm sure we'll do it at some point.
Yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there. But now we are doing the gems, the highlights of the Nazi zombie subgenre alongside Overlord. We are talking Shockwaves from 1977 and Dead Snow from 2009.
Yeah, that's right. Two films that have pushed this subgenre to its absolute heights.
Yeah, because not only do you have undead war criminals, but you also have
it sounds so much better when snow. You say it. Before we get started, though, Kim, what's keeping you creepy this week?
Well, John, we are a little late on this, but Overlord came out last week, and that's kind of the whole theme for the episode. So we wanted to talk a little bit about catching Overlord in the theater. I really enjoyed it. Surprisingly,
I was actually really worried taking you to go see it because there's a good chunk of this movie that I knew was maybe not going to be your bag.
Yeah, I had fun with it. It's a good popcorn theater movie. So if you've kind of been on the fence with it, I went in a little on the fence. It's an action movie, which is not my bag. It's a zombie movie, which we know is not my bag. And it's a war movie, which is really not my bag. But I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely checked a lot of boxes in the, like, not made for Kim column.
Exactly.
But I'm glad you liked it. I really enjoyed it when we saw it at Fantastic Fest, and I was super excited to see it again. If you guys have not seen it in the theater, one, super important to go out and support any horror as it comes along.
Yes, especially something that's original and isn't a sequel and isn't a reboot and This is like a bad robot film.
Rated R bad robot film.
Yeah, so we don't get a lot of the stuff in the theater, and especially now with everything hitting VOD instantly and heading on Netflix and stuff. When you get stuff in your theater, go see it.
Yeah, and two, the opening sequence of this movie, the first 20 minutes, I think has to be seen in the theater.
And it's stressful.
Right? Exactly. I think that's why you go to the theater. Yeah, okay, you got the comfort of your own home. That's nice and all, but it's not gonna drop you into that tension, just that heart attack-inducing opening.
I think it should also be said that any movie with a flamethrower, you should see in a movie theater.
I think that's a rule we should just write down by default for ourselves. Yeah. And if it, you know, if it's available, if it's only available on Netflix but has a flamethrower, you have to go to the arcade and watch it there on your phone. What? Yeah, no, you got to at least be within the proximity of the theater.
So you're saying the screen size is not...
Nope. Nope.
And the sound?
Nope, you just got to check in on Foursquare at the theater, regardless of what you're watching. Does anybody use Foursquare anymore? Is that still a thing?
I never Foursquared.
Yeah. It seemed like a bad idea. Like, hey, criminals, I'm not at my house right now. Yeah. Come steal everything.
Same as, like, tagging your location when you're, like, tweeting and stuff. I'll tag it if I'm leaving the place that I'm tagging.
Yeah, like, literally, like, the city limits. Like, I'm in the city limits.
Yeah. I don't know. The internet's full of weird people.
We watch horror.
There's some really nice people on the internet, don't get wrong, but there's some weird people.
Yeah, we've never run into somebody that we regret. Like, we've never run into anybody that we've talked to online that we regret doing, because everybody is super nice, but it just means that we're well overdue for a psycho, right?
Who's been plotting our movements this whole time.
Yeah. He's just, every year, like, the location services get more and more accurate, and soon enough, I will have a lock of her hair.
Oh my god.
I know, that got strange, right?
What else do we need to talk about?
If you want to hear, like, those are just a few of our thoughts on Overlord. We did a Drive Home from the Drive-In review that's available over at patreon.com/nightmareonfilmstreet, which reminds me that I need to give a big shout out to two of our most recent supporters. Katie and Calvin, thank you so much for your support, for helping keep this show alive. Guys, this is a call to arms. I don't mean to scare you, but what's the term in America for this? We call it conscription. What do they call it? Where you've been drafted. And it's a mandatory draft. We got some Nazis out there. Got a flamethrower for everybody, though. So, I mean, if you've been waiting for that moment your entire life like I have, it's going to be fine. Just don't try and light cigarettes with the flamethrower. Sounds like a bad idea, is all I'm saying.
Thank you guys so much for your support. We couldn't do this show without you. And another little note, while we're on the topic of Patreon, we are doing our holiday cards again this year. So if you are a patron or you wanted to be a patron, please just make sure your profile is updated with your full mailing address. If you've moved, if you haven't added your address yet, and if you're a new patron, just make sure you put that in there. We're going to be mailing out those cards the end of the month, the beginning of next month. So get to your profile, fill it out.
And, you know, it's something that we forget about because we're Canadian and it's already happened for us. If you are a listener in the United States today, especially.
Just a reminder.
Yeah. Happy Thanksgiving. You're late. Dinner is starting in an hour and you should already be there. Happy Thanksgiving. I don't necessarily know what you're thankful for. Probably horror movies.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah, it's and period, right? Full stop.
We just want to take the opportunity, while everybody's being thankful, just to say thank you guys all for listening, subscribing, reviewing, following us on the internet.
Recommending the show to your family at the dinner table tonight.
Recommending the show to your family. and supporting us on Patreon and everything that you guys do. We love doing Nightmare on Film Street, and we are so thankful to be invited into your homes.
Aw, got
and your
super
ears.
Cheesy. Yeah.
And your ear holes.
Yeah, it got weird. All right. Yep. Thank you again, everybody. And enough business up top. Let's get into the show. Let's talk about some Nazi zombies.
So Dead Snow from 2009, currently sitting at a 6.3 out of 10 on IMDb, a 68% on Rotten Tomatoes, and a 61% Metacritic rating.
You hadn't seen this movie before, right?
No, and I have to say I had really, really high hopes for it. I've heard really great things, like, across the horror community. Like, this is a really great zombie movie. It's in the snow. It's cold weather. They're Nazis. It's got a whole lot of interesting horror things about it.
Yeah, I have only seen the second one. I thought I had seen the first one. Definitely not. Second one is a hell of a lot of fun. The first one, what's really cool about it is that it's a Cabin in the Woods story. But it's also a zombie story. And it's also a Nazi thing. So like, maybe that's why people like it so much. It's that it's an intersection of so many genres. And it's also almost a horror comedy. I guess it is a comedy, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd say it has... It's kind of in that era, too, like the early 2000s, the late 90s, where we were trying to, like, re-identify horror because the slasher had kind of fallen by the wayside. We'd had a lot of them.
Everything had become meta.
Yeah, we were doing kind of meta weird stuff, and there was a lot of remakes, so it's just like, we're just gonna, like, fruit basket this.
Yeah, whatever ideas you got, just throw them in, guys. We're gonna make every horror movie's a stew and every ingredient's important.
Yeah, I was really surprised at how indie this was, how kind of, like, scrappy and DIY it kind of was. I didn't realize this was one... I think I knew it was a foreign film, but I wasn't expecting it to feel so small budget. I was really surprised. I was like, wow, this is kind of cool for how many times... I've seen this film mentioned in the community, like, on lists and just recommendations for, like, lesser-known horror films and underrated picks. This one's always mentioned.
Yeah. I think it just kind of came out of nowhere. My recollection of the second one is that I think I've always watched it, like, with Crank. Like, I watch Crank or Crank 2, and I'm like, oh, let's follow it up with Dead Snow 2!
Why have you seen the second one? That doesn't make any sense.
I think at one point it was the only movie that was available on Netflix.
Like, the second one and not the first one?
Yeah. And I remember really liking it. But it definitely is not that Cabin in the Woods style. It's a much larger movie. We were going across the countryside. And, like, I think at one point they have to go to a World War II museum to learn about these Nazis or get weapons to fight them. I remember being really over the top and awesome. And, like, this one is definitely really over the top, but indie awesome.
Yeah, so we follow a group of... college students. I think they're all training to be doctors.
I think every single one of them.
Yeah, they're on their Easter break, so they're going to one of them, Sarah's like cottage cabin thing in the middle of fucking nowhere. Like so in the middle of fucking nowhere that they have to park their car and then like hike several miles in like a snow trail made by one guy on a snowmobile who like goes ahead.
I love that.
I'm not about that. Like, okay, so I know you're in a horror film, la la la, like I already assume something's going to go wrong and they're 3 hours away from the fucking car. But would you ever? I guess that's the same as camping. Like, you're like, okay, leaving the car here, going to go hike for a day and a half and, like, set up camp on the top of this mountain. But,
Yeah, no, I love the idea of a remote cabin. I would like to be able to drive up to it. Or, at the very least, everyone's got a skidoo. Right?
Yeah.
The sheer fact that one guy gets to go ahead and he is not making a convenient path.
No,
he's like, you know, it'd be like, nice. I'm going to do a little S pattern here.
So and he's doing like jumps and tricks and shit. And you're like, yo, buddy.
And then I guess he starts a fire. He starts a fire so the place is warm when they get there. But it seems like it'd be nice if you just returned. Like,
and picked up one of them.
Yeah, just keep going back and forth until you got everybody, right?
No, aren't they all carrying luggage, too? Like,
what? He could have at least attached a sled and brought their bags.
We're so offended by the opening moments that we're not even going to get to zombies today, guys. It's just about asshole customs.
Oh, man. And then when they get there, his suggestion, like, you know what? Forget the fire.
I got an idea, guys. Let's go snow tubing. And then they're just, like, shivering at the edge of the property.
On the other hand, though, the snow tubing looks great.
Yeah,
he attaches them to the skidoo. They don't have to do a damn thing. They just rip around on it.
That sounds like so much fun.
Yeah, except that they're ultra cold, and it'd be nice to maybe get some warm. I guess the ones that aren't snow tubing are inside drinking hot cocoa by the fire.
I'm about that.
Isn't that what everybody's about? Like, isn't that why we all go
skiing?
Isn't
that why we're all here?
Yeah.
Hot cocoa
by the fire. No one actually likes skiing. It's all about the chalet. You go out, you're cold for a day, you come in, you burn your tongue on some hot chocolate. That's what it's about. That's where the core of it is.
The true spirit of Christmas.
Yeah. And can we also say there is one other person in this movie we have not mentioned yet, and that is the character Sarah, who, instead of parking her car and walking a whole day up to this crazy in the middle of nowhere cabin, decides she's going to trek in the snow for days to get to it?
Well, I think she's coming from a different spot. She's coming from, like, the mountains or something.
Alone.
But in the cold open, we learn that there are Nazi zombies.
I don't think at this point we know anything about them.
Well, I think we know.
We just know that
I think
are
we
things.
All saw the poster that there are Nazi zombies, and they get her. So Sarah's like, no more.
Yeah.
Definitely not alive. I do have to say, though, that in this kind of cabin in the woodsy slasher setup, these characters fucking suck.
They're the worst.
I hate
You don't even need to get to the cabin
them.
To figure that out. You
I hate
drive
them
up. They are, every single one of them, an asshole.
I hate every single one of them. Like, I was even early in the film, I was like, who's going to make it to the end? Because I don't care for any of these people.
Yeah, you got, like, these dude bro frat guys who are just
making
dicks.
Gross jokes.
The worst.
And saying nasty things. And for some reason, even though half of them are couples, they do, like, a guy car, girl car, so that they can talk about the other, like, the dating situation. And, like, it's just, it's lewd and it's crude. And
what about the girls? Do the girls say anything? I don't remember
being
mad at
the girls.
Yeah,
they're talking about the same thing and who's single and who's whatever.
Doesn't seem like it'd be news. Like, everybody would just know. There's nothing to talk about.
Well, all we learn in the girls' car, like, only important information, we learn that Hannah, who's got the dreadlocks, her boyfriend, or her fiancé, her boyfriend is the doctor-in-training guy who does not like blood. So, right from Horror Rules, we know that that is going to be addressed right away.
Oh, he's not going to be able to save her. She's going to be covered in blood, and it's going
to
be awful.
And there's going to be a lot of blood, and he's going to have to either, like, come over his fear, and then he gets to be the guy that survives to the end, or he's going to die in a pool of blood.
Good God. Is that the story arc of this movie?
That is literally it.
So one character needs to conquer his fear of blood to become a doctor.
Yeah, so, like, a few of the only lead characters that got any kind of, like, meat, and then Hannah, we learn she's claustrophobic briefly, and then she ends up in that avalanche thing where she's, like, stuck in the snow.
And okay, so everybody's a jerk. That's what we know. Which, I mean, honestly,
they're all wieners.
Not necessarily bad for a zombie movie, because we want to see all their intestines pulled out of their bellies.
I do want to say, though, there was a lot of intestines in this movie. I saw every character's intestines, and I saw a few zombie intestines.
I saw intestines I didn't want to see.
There was at least, I'm going to say, a good half dozen intestines from different sources.
Better
in
question.
This movie. I saw an intestine tied to a tree. I saw an intestine carrying somebody over the side of a cliff. I saw intestines.
Oh, yeah. One of them was definitely used for, like, a life-saving device.
As a rope.
Yeah. Okay, so quick question. If you were to line up all these intestines, one after the other, how far do you think it stretches?
Around the world.
So, it's the first night they're there. Everybody's tired. Everybody's having a few drinks.
But what they do is weird. Like, their whole hangout thing is weird. They have really weird back and forth banter, and the jokes are really odd. And I don't know if it's because we were watching the US dubbed version with some really interesting voice acting. But also, there's a quasi, like, murder attempt.
That's right. So yeah. Martin's just talking to her about anesthesiology.
So Martin, who's our lead protagonist, like, he's taken us to the end.
I mean, we don't know that initially.
But we know because he's got the one fatal flaw.
Yeah. The assholes make it to the end of this movie. And, you know, to be fair, pretty standard issue for a zombie movie. But Martin is explaining how anesthesiology was done back in the day. And, like, oh, let me show you the old school version of putting somebody under for surgery.
And he pins her arms down.
Yeah, and she's like, you're pinning my arms down. He's like, yeah, no, I know.
No.
Close your eyes. It's fine. We're going to. Okay, first off, I don't care what you're going to do. You're going to show me old school anesthesiology. Chances are I'm going to pass out. No thanks.
He puts a pillow on her face.
Yeah, and,
like, and
he's just smothering
suffocating her.
And everybody in the party's like, hey, you know she can't breathe. Like, yeah, I know. It's fine.
And he holds on way too long. And then
what?
When he finally lets her up or she breaks free or whatever, there's this, like, really tense moment where we all realize, like, that wasn't okay.
And he's like, just, oh, I'm the asshole here.
And
okay.
Then we just leave it. And they're still dating. And they're dating the next day.
That would have ended the entire trip. I would have said,
like, fuck this, I'm hiking back to the car.
Yeah, or give me the goddamn skidoo. Not even that, I would say, you are going to the car. I want you to bring the fucking car here, and we're leaving.
Oh my God.
How are these people friends?
That was, like, such a weird That was a weird vibe for the movie. I don't know where we go from here because he definitely tried to murder her.
He's gonna, I don't want to say grow up. This guy's definitely in his late 20s, but he's gonna be a serial killer.
I think it's because he's got such a big aversion to blood that he's like, no, I will find an alternate way to perform surgeries and knock people out and stuff where we don't have to put needles in their arms. We can just suffocate them temporarily and everything will be fine. Maybe that's what it was. I don't know. It was just, he tried to kill his girlfriend on night one. And then, like, the zombies aren't even here yet.
So one, two, skip a few. Sarah hasn't arrived yet. It's the next morning.
We're sort of concerned, but not really. Not enough that, like, when we leave on the only skidoo to go find her, we don't stop a few times to do a few cool flips and jumps.
Right.
And eat a sandwich
on
the top of a mountain.
There are so many action shots. Yeah, and he's just eating a sandwich with some cheese. Like, man, what a nice day. I'm not concerned at all about finding the frozen body of a girl I love.
We forgot about the Harbinger guy. So there's this, like, weird hiker guy who comes in and tells this really long, ominous Nazi story.
Yeah.
The first night. He comes and he's just like, make me some coffee.
Yeah.
Give me your beer.
Oh, and he also shits on the coffee. Like, hey, who made the coffee? I did.
Oh,
it
that was
sucks.
Funny. And she's like, it's organic.
Yeah. He tells them all about the Nazis who used to come into the area and torture the villagers. And they, you know, if that wasn't bad enough, they stole all their gold.
And, like, ran them into the mountains.
Yeah, you know, whatever. I'm sure it's all going to come into play at some point.
But then he kind of says something weird about, like, keeping quiet or whatever. So it's almost like everybody knows there's zombies here. And if you're loud, you'll wake them up.
Yeah.
Almost.
He showed up to warn them.
Yeah. You know. But then he leaves and he just goes and camps in his tent in the wilderness. And you're like, wait, if you know that there's evil here and evil coming, like, why are you just, like, chilling in a tent?
Yeah. He doesn't at all sound like it's a joke. Like, he's trying to ruin their night or something.
Or, like, yeah, just tease the kids.
He sounds sincere about it.
Yeah.
He grabs one of them by the throat.
He strangles one of them. Yeah. A theme here.
Yeah. Everybody gets strangled. And he's like, what are you going to do if you're faced with certain death? It's...
And then he's faced with it later that night and he dies.
And he seems kind of surprised by it. You know, that scene is actually pretty scary.
Where he dies in the tent?
Yeah. Because he's got a fire going outside a little bit, right?
No, I think he's, like, down for the night.
My mistake. He's got a lantern, at least.
He's got a gun.
He's got a lantern, he's got a gun. But when he goes out to investigate, you just realize how pitch black it is.
Yeah, I did like the scenes of the flashlight, like, on the snow and you can't see anything else. Like, it does get fucking dark in the wilderness.
Yeah, it's like he's trying to use a single straw as a binocular. Like, how are you ever going to use this tiny little beam of light to scan out the entire area?
Especially once we learn that these are not slow zombies. So you see one in the distance, and then it slits his fucking throat because it finds him before he finds it again with the beam of light.
Oh, man.
Spooky.
Yeah. I think, honestly, though, I think it was one zombie who was, like, in front of him.
And got another zombie?
Yeah, so kind of like... the raptors.
Tag team.
Yeah, they attack from the side. Clever girl. Raptors. So he's dead. Our hunk, who's gone off on a skidoo to find his girlfriend, encounters the dead body of the Harbinger man.
And then he falls in a pit, which has got a whole bunch of, like, Nazi memorabilia in it. And also his dead girlfriend's head.
One thing we learn real quickly in that scene, though, which I was waiting for, is that... if you are attacked by a zombie, you do not become a zombie.
Yes. And because this film exists in a world where there are horror movies, one of the characters, Erland, we'll get to him in a bit. But he's definitely a horror movie fan because he's talking about horror movies when they get to the cabin. He also, when they realize that they're facing zombies, says that you can't get bitten because you'll
turn. Whatever
you
do, don't get bit.
Yeah. And fun fact about him is he's also wearing a brain dead t-shirt. Which is, for us in the North Americas, Dead Alive.
Yep.
He dies like a character in that movie. He gets fingers in his eyes and his head split apart.
Oh, it's the greatest death ever! It's the greatest death...
It's the greatest death ether!
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Because his head cracks open like a walnut and his brains just splatter out on the
floor. Oh my god, and the zombies don't even get his brains because they fall on the floor in the cabin. I love a good brain shot.
Oh man, so good.
And I think that's one of the only instances of brains in this whole movie.
That's what I was going to say. It's the only time where we have anything other than intestines.
Actually, something I read really fun about this movie is the director, who also co-wrote the film, in an interview says, I like to think of them as Nazi zombies, in that they are Nazis first, ooh, and then they are zombies. So, yes, they are using their abilities as zombies to come back and get these people.
Yeah, they do take their gold out. I mean...
Oh, that's true. Yeah. They did transgress.
They found their gold in their little cottage fridge.
Yeah, which was like, what?
A great place to hide the gold if anybody's looking. They'll never look in the teeny fridge.
Yeah, but apparently in the one guy who has his dream the first night about Sarah, she comes in and puts something in the cabin. So I don't know if her ghost or whatever and something about the land bringing people back, because they don't really get into how these zombies come back. Like, are they cursed because of the gold? You kind of assume. Are they ghosts? Because they're not like plague zombies. They're not like sickness zombies.
Yeah, it looks like they were awoken. They seem to be a lot like the...
Like the fog?
Or the pirates. Yeah, actually, it's a good blend of Pirates of the Caribbean and the fog, right?
They are very Pirates of the Caribbean. They're like, I need my gold.
Because they seem to be called by it. Hey, yeah. There's a scene where somebody drops it in the snow and they're all like, huh? Yeah, I mean, if the lepers in the fog were actually zombies, boom, that's our movie right there. Back at the cottage, having drinks, acting like fools, and I don't even know how to say this.
Pooping in the water closet.
Erland announces to the room that he's gonna go take a shit. Long story short, two characters have sex in an outhouse.
While one of them's pooping.
While one of them is pooping.
Like, I don't even want to talk about this moment.
I'm sorry, Kim. I have nothing else to say about this movie other than this scene.
They finish up, whatever. He leaves, he goes back inside, and he's just like all smug face, and they're like, you're gone a while. He leaves Chris, the girl, in the outhouse, because I assume she's like, actually gotta go to the bathroom, and it was like ill time. I don't know. She's still in the outhouse. There's obviously a zombie out there. It like reaches in through the back of the outhouse and like pulls her
is that what
into
it does?
The poop.
For a second, I thought that poor girl was going to die of hypothermia from...
And it was steaming. It was steaming, which means it was fresh.
It's disgusting. Everything about this is disgusting. Honestly, this scene just got worse and worse and worse. Okay, this guy's in the outhouse pooping. Gross. Hopefully he gets killed by a zombie and this is over fast. Nope. Somebody's coming in. They're having sex in there. Guys, it's gonna smell so disgusting. How could you possibly think this is a good idea?
He was sitting on the toilet with his pants down. Like, he was probably not done. I really hope that that actress has gone on to have a really bright career and she can bury this role down the bottom of her IMDb list. And it's like the first thing she ever did and she doesn't have to talk about it ever in interviews or ever, ever, ever. Because it's just like, yeah, so I had one big scene where poop and zombies and poop again.
Like, how do you go home at Christmas and tell everybody that this is what you did over the holidays?
Oh, man. And let you know, she could be really proud.
It's one of those things, I guess, that when you're filming it, it's hilarious. And to you, it's really funny because you're so removed from it. You're like, yeah, we smeared some brownie batter over me. I crawled through the snow. It was really funny. There were so many takes that got ruined because we were laughing over the audio track. Not happening here, guys. Like, I know it's played for humor, and yucks, it is so fucking gross. I can't handle it. Ugh. A bunch of people die in various different ways. Something that bugs me so much is that the two characters that I hate the most are the guys that make it out alive.
Yeah, so they propose splitting up a bunch of times, and everybody's like, that's not really a good idea. But this time they're like, yeah, totally, we're not all gonna die. In doing that, one of the girls is immediately disemboweled, Liv, and it's this really cool POV moment where the camera's all funny, and we get to see more intestines, which is, you know, what this movie was really lacking. Hannah ends up in the snow because she is chased by zombies, she climbs a tree, la la la.
Finds herself at the edge of a cliff.
Falls off a cliff with one.
I wouldn't even say falls, intentionally.
Yeah, where she's stomping, she's like, muh, and you're like, you're gonna die, and she's like, muh, and you're like, you're really gonna die. Again.
Yeah, she sees that she's on a buildup at the end of the cliff and she takes a zombie down with her.
They both survive, because a zombie I get, but her, she ends up like butt up in the snow.
That was a great callback scene, though. She's got to figure out what direction to dig because
yeah, and there's some like Blair Witch boogers. It's great.
But yeah, that zombie's still alive. She definitely kicks his fucking head in.
I love when people kill zombies without weapons. I love when they smush their brains and stuff because they'd be so soft and pliable.
Speaking of without weapons.
Because they're old.
Speaking of without weapons, These Nazis don't have weapons either.
No, you'd think they would have. They would be using guns or something.
Especially given that they have guns.
They do. They have a secret cache that the one guy falls in.
Right?
Skidoo guy.
Yeah, and he like attaches one of those guns to his skidoo and he comes roaring in there when the zombie horde is chasing down Martin and Ross. Martin and Roy. And just starts pumping lead into these guys.
Yeah. And then the one boss zombie's pretty cool. We haven't talked about him.
The boss zombie's pretty great.
He's just super ominous and he's got like this cool jaw teeth thing. And he wears his hat all proper. I wonder if the zombies, like before they rise, were like in their little bunker, like ironing their suits. We can look decayed, but the suits must be pressed.
Yeah. But you must look your best and you must starch those creases.
Turn out, boys. Like, Jimmy, put your jaw back on.
Line up for inspection. Your jaw is misplaced.
Oh, I was really hoping we weren't going to make any Nazi jokes get through this episode, but we made it about 20 minutes. So good job, John. We did it.
Unfortunately, yeah, Martin gets bitten. He chops off part of his arm with a chainsaw, which he doesn't know he does not need to do.
No, he does not.
But on the other hand, I mean, there's got to be a lot of bad bacteria. Like, if a person bites you, you need to tend to that wound. Or, let alone a zombie. Think about all the horrible...
Yeah, but...
It'd be like getting a flesh-eating disease.
But cutting off an arm when you're, like, out in the wilderness, especially when it's below zero, is just not a good idea.
Yeah, and I love that he's like, remember how they taught us about amputating? I think we can handle this.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
What?
Also, they're doctors, and they do that movie thing where you're like, I'm just gonna burn the wound. That seals it. You're like, yeah,
done.
Every time. Always works. Every doctor's always recommended it.
Just stick your arm in the fire.
That is my favorite. Like, you get a bullet hole, you're like, heat up the iron. This'll fix it all. Like, no, you're maybe
there's
doing.
Still a bullet in there.
Yeah.
You gotta get bullet. That out.
Unfortunately, Roy doesn't make it out. In fact, our hunk on the skidoo, I don't remember his goddamn name, he doesn't make it out either.
Vigard.
Super sad. Oh, and of course, Martin, the super nice guy that he is, gets a chance to finally kill his girlfriend.
Yeah, she makes it out. She makes it back. And
after
then
falling off a cliff, she makes it out alive.
And then he, whaps her in the neck with a... Is it an axe?
Yeah, like a little hatchet. I mean, she did make the mistake. Like, he is clearly just pummeling this zombie. He is in rage mode. And she does...
She comes to, tap him on the shoulder.
Like, how is that a good idea? When has that ever worked? You don't tap somebody on the shoulder if they're cooking with something hot.
But he definitely foreshadowed her death by almost murdering her in Act 1.
Yeah. Well, his dreams have come true.
The prophecy.
That old creepy man was right.
So then eventually he returns them the gold. He's like the lone survivor. He's running towards the car. Everything's peachy. He's gonna be okay.
Yeah, they seem cool. That they're like, cool, thank you for the gold.
You may
go on your day.
Then, in true The Fog, they realize, what about the cross?
Oh.
And then they come back for one last scare. Yeah, he still has a coin in his pocket.
One thing I gotta say, I don't want to talk too much about the sequel, but the greatest thing about the sequel is that it literally takes place the moment this movie ends.
That's such a good idea.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because there's nobody left from the original. You have one guy.
Yeah, and like Evil Dead 2, it sort of summarizes the first movie and picks up right where that zombie punches through the window, and then we're across the countryside, out of the cabin, and into the woods where zombies are running around. I don't really know what their motivation is in the second one. Is it you might just get away with the coin? They're like, oh, we need that coin back.
Maybe they're awoken. Mm. Maybe somebody stealing their gold awoke them, and now they're ready to continue their Nazi agenda.
We should totally watch it. I remember it being a lot of fun. But before we move on, Kim, how would you rate Dead Snow?
Oh, man. I was so frustrated by this movie.
Yeah.
There was a lot of intestines. The characters were all wieners.
Every single one of them.
I did really like the zombies. There seems to be a lot of Nazi zombie movies, which is weird because you don't think of it as its own subgenre, but it definitely is.
Oh, it's totally a subgenre.
It definitely is.
And there's no way that Overlord isn't bringing it back.
I want more zombie westerns.
Oh, yeah.
Well, sandwich.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and play Red Dead Redemption 2.
He didn't hear me.
The sandwich? Oh.
So I'm going to go 2 out of 4.
I'm going to give us a 2.5 out of 4 because I thought it was a hell of a lot of fun. You know, if you take out that outhouse scene, I might bump up to a 3. You offer me a director's cut with that scene taken out, I'd buy it.
I did like the skidoo jumping, though. That was...
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Are they not called... They're called snowmobiles. I think skidoos are the water ones.
No, that's a sea-doo, isn't it? Sea-doo and skidoo? Or wait a minute.
Oh no.
Are we just taking the word like 23 skidoo and just applying it to a snow machine?
I don't know.
It's probably, I think you're snowmobile. Right. I think it's a snowmobile.
Okay.
We live in Canada. Why don't we know this?
I've never been on one.
I've been.
Actually, that's not true. Near there one. Used to be one beside my grandma's house, and I used to sit on it.
Oh, all right. So you've been like on one. You've just never ridden.
In a stack of logs, so I don't think it was working.
It's so fucked up. You Room. See people riding those things through water.
We live in an area where there's literally snowmobile tracks beside next the to the road. Yeah. Like, there's no sidewalk there, but there are snowmobile walk. Snowmobile path? Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, in the Arctic, in the tundra, people will go from ice float to ice float across the water with their snowmobile.
I don't agree.
I don't agree either. That's it seems scary. Like an awful idea. But everybody looks like they're having a good time, so it can't be that bad.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is the smell of the leftover tuna fish sandwich you left in your lunchbox over the weekend in a wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, wimpy, wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a Hefty Ultra Strong trash bag.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Ah, smell the difference? Hefty Ultra Strong has Arm & Hammer with continuous odor control, so no matter what's inside your trash, you can stay one step ahead of stinky. And for bigger jobs, try the superior strength of Hefty large black bags.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
All right, moving on, we are going to talk about shockwaves from 1977.
Something unknown, something unforeseen, something unspeakable lives below, and it lives to destroy. They have risen.
We created the perfect soldier from cheap hoodlums and thugs, and a good number of pathological murderers and sadists as well. We called them the Toten Core, the Death Core. Creatures more horrible than any you can imagine.
Starring the Masters of Shock, John Carradine and Peter Cushing.
You are indeed very stupid. Now it is too late.
Now the total horror has begun. Now there is no way out. Now the ocean becomes a graveyard.
So Shockwaves from 1977. Currently sitting at a 5.7 out of 10 on IMDb. And it didn't have a critic rating on Rotten Tomatoes, but it has a 39% audience rating.
Yeah, and surprisingly, no rating from Roger Ebert on this one.
What did you know about this movie going in? Did you know anything?
Well, before we even considered it for the podcast, all I knew was aquatic Nazi zombies.
I didn't even know they were aquatic.
You know what?
Think.
I don't even think I knew they were Nazis. I just knew aquatic zombies.
I knew, like, cool goggle zombies. Yeah. I was picturing, like, a bunch of Igors, which is kind of what I got. Like, a bunch of Igor zombies.
Kind of. Before we, like, right before we recorded, when I was, like, looking to see if it'd be a good pairing, maybe, the only other info I got was I fully completed that aquatic Nazi zombie, and then plus Peter Cushing? That was a surprise.
Yeah, I've seen the poster, so I was really familiar with the poster, so I was kind of just going off of that.
That's
and it
a
was
cool
like,
poster.
The cool Igor zombies.
Yeah, and he's holding like the wreckage of that boat like it's a machete. Looks
yeah,
cool.
The poster for this movie is like really, really cool.
It's the best part of this movie.
Looks like it's going to be a really exciting film.
Oh, it looks like it's going to be a thrill ride.
Yeah, so this is the caption for the movie.
Please give it.
Or the what would you call it?
Tagline?
The poster.
Poster tagline.
Yeah. It's kind of long for a tagline, but we're going to go with it.
All right.
Yeah. Once they were almost... Sorry, I dropped my pen. Once they were almost human. Beneath the living, beyond the dead, from the depths of hell's ocean, the deep end of horror. That was pretty good.
That was... First of all, your performance.
Thank
stellar.
You.
Secondly, great synopsis.
I know.
I'm sold.
Oh my god, they're from the sea.
Yeah, the depths of hell's ocean? Oh, and even before they became zombies, they were almost human? You mean to tell me when these guys were walking the earth, they were monsters
well,
of...
yeah, they're super soldiers.
All right.
Okay. Super soldiers. And they're beneath the living. That's my favorite line of the whole thing.
Beneath the living?
Beneath the living. Like, spooky. Yeah. There's a lot of really... I have to give this movie credit for the ambitious underwater shots of the guys, like, walking on the bottom of the water. All of the scenes are definitely in very, very shallow water.
Yeah.
And they're not trying to hide it. Like, they have characters just, like, hopping out of boats and shit. And you're like, you guys are in a puddle. You guys are on a boat.
Very
in a
clearly
puddle.
In a puddle. And then when it's almost as though the camera noticed and they had to improvise a way to fix it. Like, no, we hit a mudslide section.
Push
high
the
mud.
Boat.
Yeah,
push
the boat. It's like that news reporter who's like, yep. Flooding in the streets of wherever I am right now. As you can see, there are several feet of water, and then two people go walking by because clearly the canoe is just in a puddle.
So the film opens with Rose, who is kind of abandoned in a dinghy, and she's sunburnt, and she's delirious, and she doesn't really realize she's been rescued, and the entire film is her recounting the events of how she ended up... shipwrecked in this boat.
Yeah, some great voiceover work from her too. Like I was rescued and
I didn't even know.
Little
did I know that they were actually helping me. I don't know why I turned her into a damsel there, but
what's great about it though is that her voiceover implies that she is retelling a story to us, which includes her being rescued. So not like we are three stages away from what's actually happened. Like the movie is a story that she's probably told these people who rescued her. But even that part of the story is a story that she is telling us as, like, an omnipotent narrator?
Yeah, so this is after the rescue.
Yeah.
So we cut back to the incident. She's on this mysterious yacht with another couple. So it's Rose, who is the young, cool swimmer girl on this sort of yacht. But it looks like a fisherman's boat. But we'll get into that.
Yeah.
There's Norman and Beverly, who are this, like, really dysfunctional couple. He's an ass.
Oh, yeah.
Then there's Chuck, who's kind of easygoing, kind of cool. I don't know why he's on the fucking boat.
He's a playboy with a perm.
There's Keith, who is, like, the first mate, co-captain. And then there's Captain Ben Morris, who is played by John Carradine.
Yeah. John Carradine, by the way, had 351 credits listed to his name on IMDb.
That's a lot of credits.
That's insane. I was just taking a quick scroll through. Every single one of those credits looks like a movie we should watch.
So how many of his movies have you seen, John, of the 300?
Of the 351? I mean, if I do a quick little tally right now, at least one. I've seen Shockwaves, and the name is very familiar. He's in some Alfred Hitchcock Presents stuff. He was in an episode of The Girl from U.N.C.L.E. and two episodes of The Man from U.N.C.L.E. A lot of TV work. A lot of cool movies. They look like creature features. I'm sure he shook hands with Roger Corman more than once. And he is a salty captain. Can we just say he is taking none of the shit from... But on the other hand, the people that he's got on his boat, equal asses.
Yeah, but they are also paying customers. And he's just like, I already spent your money. And you're like, okay.
They come across some weird orange glow.
Yeah, there's some strange lighting. But then cut to night. We don't care. It's nighttime. Everybody's under... What do you call that when you're in the...
Bed?
In the galley?
Yeah, the galley.
Under the ship.
Is it just called a galley?
Off the...
We never get an understanding
of
how...
any ship terms.
Of
oh,
the
God.
Layout of this boat, but it seems like it can hold a lot of people.
Yeah, because there's two downstairs, is because the couple, they're like, I'm going upstairs, and then he goes upstairs, and then he's in another level, and then he's like, I'm going upstairs. This is a big boat. For what it looks like on the sea. It doesn't look that big.
And they're all surprised that they're the only people there. Every time we met a new character, I was shocked that there was space for that person.
Yeah, I didn't know this was a tourist boat. I thought this was like a fishing boat.
I don't even honestly know where they're going.
I don't either.
Did they ever explain that?
I have no idea.
Because it's definitely not a cruise or even like some low rent cruise.
Why didn't they fly?
Maybe they were trying to go somewhere where that was only accessible by boat.
Well, they sure ended up at a place only accessible by several boats.
Yeah. This vacation seems perfect for the kind of person that wants to die at sea.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Ideal. Simply ideal.
And for all the complaints this guy has about how dingy the boat is and how unkempt everything is, why did he even pay to go on the boat?
I don't know.
You know what? You know what I realized? This is 1977. He did not look up reviews of that boat online and see photos.
He did not go to Yelp. He did not go to TripAdvisor.
That's his own fault.
Nope.
Yeah.
So night comes and the younger guy, Keith, is manning the ship.
Yeah.
With his toes.
Heading north-northwest.
Rose comes up. They're having some cute back and forth banter. While they're talking, he kind of reveals, like, really nonchalantly.
Oh, all the equipment's broken.
Yeah, that the compass hasn't been working all day. And it's just really, we don't know where we are.
I love the reveal of info, though. Like, so how do you, like, navigate this thing? Oh, it's really simple. It's just based on mathematics. I mean, you point your boat where
distance,
you need to go.
Direction, time.
Speed. Yeah, time, speed, and you'll get there in time.
Like, oh, so where are we now? He's like, I don't know.
I have no idea. Yeah. The compass has been broken. None of the equipment works. We're just floating on sheer willpower. And on top of that,
there's a ghost ship.
Yeah, there's a ghost ship, and he's traveling in darkness.
Pure darkness.
Which is why it's so easy for them to come up on this ghost ship. They crash into the ghost
ship. It's not a ghost ship, but it's definitely a ship that's ominous.
Well, it comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Which is a surprise.
Like a ghost.
Like a ghost. And it ruptures the hull like a ghost iceberg.
It doesn't rupture the... Well, I guess it does rupture the hull.
They leave the boat the next day because it's carrying water.
He says everything's fine. He's like, go back to bed. And the captain's just like, meow, 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 crotchety. And then the next day, he's missing. And then they have to get off the boat. And I'm like, I missed a step here. Why are we getting off the boat? And they're like, okay, we have to repair the hull. But everybody gets off and goes on this abandoned island, and nobody is repairing the hull, so I don't understand.
I don't know that they necessarily brought equipment to repair the hull, which is crazy, because even in Captain Ron, they have equipment to repair a boat.
Yeah, so they're just planning on being on this abandoned island and hoping for the best?
Yeah.
Like, were they long-term planning on staying on this island?
I don't think so.
I thought it was just one night.
Yeah, I don't know what the plan is. Like, you would think, okay, get everybody off the boat, safety first, don't want to get into a lawsuit. And then we'll go back, and using the tools and materials we brought in case of an emergency, we'll pump the water out and fix her up.
Yeah, and meanwhile, while we're de-boating to another, like, dinghy to take us to the island, we see the captain dead and drowned. And also, the boat that they crashed into has now become wreckage. Like, it was a boat, and now it's just, like, old, rusty wreckage in the water. And then these, like, zombie guys come out of the wreckage, and then there's a bunch of really fun underwater
You are watching this movie on fast forward right now. There's a great shot.
I'm just getting us to the deep boating. You were talking about them being on the island. I'm getting us there.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. But there is a great shot the night before where he shoots up a flare, and that's how he's able to see the boat. And it's pure wreckage. We see there. That's why we...
There's a lot of flare misadventure in this movie.
There is a lot.
Flare's gone wrong. Flare's gone wild.
Flare's gone wild. That's the alternate title. On the way to the island, when they discover the captain's body, a scare that is used more than once in this movie is the glass bottom boat.
They got a nice little viewport for, like, I guess, fish watching.
Yeah.
For the tourists.
The only thing they ever see in it is corpses.
This is our corpse finder.
Corpse finder 3000. Somebody climbs a tree. I think it's Chuck. Chuck climbs a tree for no reason. I guess he's going to get a coconut, but while he's up there, he sees a old abandoned hotel.
Which is like, oh, convenient.
Yeah, right? There's nothing else on this island. There isn't even, like, a loungy area. If you got an abandoned hotel, surely to God there's some lounge chairs that have been misplaced on the beach, but there's no evidence.
It was a really ornate hotel, and you're kind of wondering, too, because you know this is going to end up being a Nazi movie, and you're like, where does this hotel fit in with the Nazis? The answer is... Peter Cushing.
Yeah, Peter Cushing's like a Nazi hermit who's after. So he was. He tells them this story that he was in charge of a death squad of unhuman,
elite, murderous mutants.
Yeah,
are they mutants? Because they're definitely mutants. They wear goggles that kill them if you take them.
Oh, Jesus, that doesn't even make any sense.
Or is that a zombie fact? Like, is that a zombie or? Are they not zombies? They just never died, and this is them in their regular...
That is a great question. What's really interesting is that they mentioned to him that they ran into the wreckage. He goes, what wreckage? What are you talking about?
Bah.
Because by their estimation, it's been there for decades. Because it's been rotting and rusting.
boats don't rot, they rust. And boats Peter Cushing rot. Can't believe it because
boats can be whatever they want.
It's the boat that he sank. Because he was the commander of the squad, and he realized when the war was ending and Nazis were losing, thankfully, that he sunk
the ship.
Good job
getting that in there, Joe.
I don't know why I thought I had to. I think we're all pretty happy those guys are gone.
Just so you know, guys, we don't like them.
Yeah.
Just in case you were wondering where our stance was.
Peter Cushing decides to sink the ship and kill all the guys inside.
But you can't kill what is already dead.
Evil is eternal, don't you know? P.S. Is Peter Cushing... Like, he's still a Nazi, right?
I thought he... Because
the flag.
Yeah, I was gonna say, so like he's like this crazy hermit who's like, I've been alone so long. Apart from like taking care of those fish, like good on him for keeping those fish alive in the kitchen. Yeah. Although were they food fish? No, I don't know. But one point they're trying to escape on the boat or whatever, and then he takes it upon himself to do like some interior decorating, and he like spruces up the office again, and they come in and he's like got the flag up and he's like, oh, by the way, this is that kind of film.
Made it a little more hospitable for you.
He does have a sweet scar.
It's a crazy scar.
There's a lot of like scar beauty shots too. And they're like, yeah.
All over it.
We paid a lot for Peter Cushing to be here. We hired a car.
We hired a car.
Didn't you see that in the IMDb trivia? The old IMDb trivia?
Nope.
He was paid $25,000 for his 5-minute role. And he got a car.
Like they gave him a car?
No, like a driver from his like chartered flight from England to come appear in this Nazi zombie movie.
Sounds like standard issue. Like if you're going to pay for somebody to be in your movie, pay for them to get there too.
Yeah, but then they only paid John Carradine, I think it was like $5,000.
Well, I mean, if that's all he asked for, that's not their fault.
He's got to get a better agent. Also, one of the zombies like wrote for like the Miami Herald or something. And then
fucking kidding?
He wrote a big like op-ed about it, and nobody knew that he worked for the newspaper.
That's hilarious.
And it was like my life as a zombie.
Okay, so I mean, you hinted at it a little bit earlier, and you were pretty open about your distaste of these underwater shots. Like,
no, I love them.
Oh, okay, good, because I really, really, really like them.
No, they're super cheese balls, but I'm about them.
No, I thought they were awesome. I thought
cheese
they were great,
balls.
Super blue, and like. What's great about it?
Yeah, but there's nothing ominous about like a real life guy walking underwater and his hair being all wet. Like it would have been cool if they had done some like backwards footage where they filmed them going in the water backwards and then coming out and then being all dry. I wanted something ghostly about them being underwater, but they were just like underwater a lot.
I'm with you. They were definitely just
popping
a normal
up, like,
person
gophers.
Walking around, gophering out of the lake. There is nothing.
They gophered out of the lake. That was their only move.
There's nothing scary about wet hair. There's something of it, like,
no,
a lot of these shots
underwater,
in the back.
Underwater, it looked really ethereal, like they were mermaids.
I thought it was okay underwater. As soon as they come up, though, and their hair just, like, sticks to their head and stuff, like, nah, that's a human problem. These guys are obviously not monsters.
Didn't slow them down, though.
And you know what? We should probably give them credit for how fast they were moving, because I'm sure you've been pushed into a pool or walked into the water with your clothes on, immediately 100 pounds on your body.
It needs to be said, though, that they are the most inefficient assassins of all time, and how they were used in World War II is beyond me.
Well, what they explain at the beginning is that they don't have weapons.
It took them 3 days to kill a handful of unarmed tourists
who
were in
also
the water,
pretty good at trying to kill themselves.
Their playing field. Yeah, the first guy dies by sea urchin. He doesn't even die by assassin.
The greatest death that we have seen this year.
Mm.
I'm saying it right now. It's better than anything that was in Puppet Master, which are probably my second favorite kills. The sheer fact that this guy falls face first onto a sea urchin, I loved it.
And then that girl is just swimming anywhere. Like, she's just swimming in the pond and she discovers him. And it's like, that pond was shallow enough for him to, like, trudge through with his dirty-ass sack.
And he's collecting food for dinner, right?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
And it's, like, gross and wet, and she's swimming in it, and then you're like, is this a gator place? Like, are there snakes you gotta worry about?
Nobody
There's
knows anything.
Obviously sea
there
urchins.
Could be piranhas.
Why are you swimming here?
How do sea urchins work? Are they really that fucking sharp? Like, if you fell on them, would that be
the
end of your day?
Yeah, I think that's, like, their whole thing.
That
they're pointy.
They're just...
And mean.
Okay.
We're landlocked here, so we don't know anything about the ocean and aquatic life.
Yeah, sea urchins seem like risky business. Like, I would not mess with them.
Well, clearly the assassins know to harness their urchiny abilities because they just, like, watched. But they're so inefficient.
They really could have
killed
more people.
They break down a couple walls and stuff and fences, but Otherwise, they're just, like, really ominous, and they just appear and, like, look and glare and stuff. And I guess when this came out, there wasn't a lot like this, so simply showing them is really creepy and cool.
Some of the close-up shots were really good. And like, the boils on their face and whatnot.
Yeah, and seeing them, like, in the water and stuff was great the first, like, 10 times we saw it. After, like, part 15, when they're getting on the boat, and they're like, come on, guys, get on the boat! And then the boat gets away from them and just sails off.
Okay,
and all the assassins are just
down.
Okay.
We gotta talk about that whole scene.
Okay.
Because Peter Cushing has told them about this boat, and they're headed toward it. It's gonna be their salvation. I don't even remember what they all can't get in the boat. Is it just the zombies pop up?
No,
and they're like, we gotta fight these zombies.
They're stuck in the mud, and then Beverly falls down, and there's a bunch of zombies there. But I'm not sure how close in relation the zombies are to Beverly, because they're in two different shots.
And they never move.
She's just staring at them, like, ominously, and they're staring at her ominously, and then they go back to get Beverly.
Like, it was awkward? Like, they didn't mean to run into each other? Like, oh, we were on our way to the grocery store.
Yeah, and then they all get out of the boat, and then the boat picks up wind and just sails off empty.
Yeah. Which is kind of, that kind of sucks, I guess.
Yeah, that boat moved really fast. Just really fast.
Everybody got off that boat for no reason. It made no sense. And then, all of a sudden, we're back on land. Everybody's dry,
and
everything's
they're separated.
Fine.
They lost each other in losing the boat and getting back to the hotel, which I guess is a good idea.
And nobody got killed by these things in the water. Like, they basically spooked them out of their boat.
Yep. Yep.
Oh, there's a reel missing. Like, 100%, they lost a reel on the way to the studio, and they were like, fuck it, the movie works without it.
I think the water kill days were a separate day from, like, the plot days, and they didn't have a connecting death for that boat instance.
Oh, well.
I don't know.
But then we get into, like, some infighting, like, the group is confined, and we find out that Chuck is claustrophobic.
And he's freaking out, man!
Yeah, but all of those days where he's in a very tight galley or bedroom on the boat were
How
totally fine.
How would he be fine on a boat?
Come on.
You would not be okay on a boat. There are, like, no windows down there, and if there are, they are the size of your fist.
Yeah, so he fires a flare off
inside
in this tiny little room.
A fridge.
Yeah, they're staying in a fridge, because that's the safest spot to
it
be.
It locks. Well, and sure. Something about the zombies, they realize that they're not good with light, so that they're in the dark.
Yeah, who is it that somebody pulls off their goggles and it, like, immediately kills them?
I think Rose pulls off one of their goggles, but, and then he, like, foams and... the dead zombie looks great, because it's like he mummifies a little bit,
yeah.
And it looks pretty cool.
But she doesn't relay that info to anybody, does
she? No, there isn't a scene like, okay, guys, we can take them all down. There's only 8 of them, and there were a bunch of us, and now there's probably, like, 4 of us left. But all you gotta do is de-goggle those really inefficient assassins.
Yeah, just start reaching for those head straps, and don't shoot off any flares. That's the one way we're gonna make it out. Oh, we lost already? Oh, goddammit, Chuck.
And then there's a 5-minute recovery scene where Chuck just, like, fucks off into the pool.
And Beverly's...
And everybody's just choking on smoke in the kitchen.
And of
just
course, because there just happens to be some rainwater collected in that pool, there's a zombie hiding in there.
He's in that pool permanently. Like, they've really, they've appointed him as the pool zombie, and they're like, hang out here. Trust me, it's gonna pay off, Chuck.
Do you think there's a couch
down
at
the
bottom
water.
In the deep end of that pool?
He's in that pool for, there's 2 instances, like 2 pool fighting instances, and he is there both times, just lurking in the shadows, just waiting for his pool moment to shine. Chuck dies in the pool. So I guess it worked out. That's their big action sequence, too. There's a lot of
fighting. Lot of punching in there.
Fighting and whatever.
If only Rose had said something about getting those goggles
just
off.
Just taking the goggles off.
Yeah,
you know, if you get close enough to take the goggles off, you just take the fucking goggles off.
And then it's Beverly, I think. Beverly gets blinded by the flare, so she spends the rest of the movie just kind of, like, stumbling around.
And she ends up in the fish tank.
Yeah.
That looks good, though. She was bloated. I don't know if that was, like, a water effect or if they put, like, a bloaty suit on her.
That'd be kind of cool.
She looked kind of bloated.
She'd been in that water for minutes.
I don't care.
It's fine. Like, that's the only reason we had Peter Cushing taking care of some goldfish, because we needed to have a body found in there.
Do we see Peter Cushing die? Because I do not remember seeing him die.
So here's the thing. I also have no recollection of him dying.
I remember
him. Did we both black out?
Running out to the beach, and then he, like, sat in the sand.
Well, he tries to command them.
Okay.
Like, because he figures,
so
okay.
They definitely kill him.
They definitely kill him. They drown him. But I don't know. I think we were both just in our heads for a minute, and we both simultaneously missed that scene, which bothers me. It's like a Berenstain Bears thing.
I feel like it was important.
Yeah. Either way, he tries to command them because he's their old commander.
they're not having any of it because rank has been broken.
They're zombies now. They do not follow the laws of man.
Were they always like that? Because the plan for these guys was, okay, we're going to make these elite soldiers. They don't need weapons. They breathe underwater. We'll put them on a submarine and let them walk across the ocean floor to the enemy and go into their boats and kill them?
Pretty cool.
Yeah, so I don't know if they never died or not.
I don't know if they were always water assassins, though. I think the water thing is like a zombie element because they don't have to breathe now. So that they get to be assassins.
I thought that was something
assassins.
They could do while they were alive, quotations.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, because he sunk their boat. Like, they lived on a boat.
Well, maybe they were transporting to the war or whatever. Because I don't even know where this island is. I don't know where in the world we are.
Yeah, you'd think we're at least, like...
I don't know.
Somewhere close to Germany.
Well, the hotel where they filmed at was in Florida.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's all right.
Yeah.
I guess there were palm trees, yeah.
Apparently it was, like, out of business for 2 years, and they were like, we will rent your thing for our set. And then they've since refurbished the hotel, and it's now, like, a really nice, ritzy... Well, it was, and I don't know if it still is. Yeah.
So Keith and Rose are in another boat. They're on their way out
boat
of town.
Number two.
Yeah, and this is where we see another corpse that glass bottom.
We never see the yacht again. Does the yacht sink, or are they... Is it parked?
Yeah, what is the term for park in a boat? Is that you anchor? We're anchored.
Yeah, you anchor it.
We throw anchor down.
But if it's taken on water, like, shouldn't they be going back to the boat and bailing it out and hoping for the best? Because 8 people bailing out a boat that's got a hole, you might be okay for a little while. Unless it's sunk. But we don't revisit it.
No, we don't see it sink. We just, we see Keith get, this is a cool death. I mean, there's nothing special to it. It just looks good. One of the zombies pops up, grabs Keith around the midsection, pulls him right down into the water, and he disappears forever.
And then Rose is all like Rose in Titanic and is like, there's no room on the door. And she just like looks on sadly. And they never pop back up. And, oh, she sees him in the viewfinder.
Oh, that's, yeah.
Yeah. And he's, like, strangled by the boat ropes, which is a nice touch. Maybe he was just, like, hanging him there like an ornament. Like, oh, you're going to survive in this boat for a while, but you have to look at this corpse that we have tethered to the bottom of it for the duration of your stay.
And they don't do anything to try and get her. I guess they only exist around that beach. Like, they can't go further away from their boat. Either that or they just gotta let somebody live to tell the story.
It might be another curse thing. Like, maybe they're cursed to, like, the location of their wreckage or something.
It seems like they
although I think
transported
they just,
their wreckage.
I don't know the rules of these guys.
I think they tour around like pirates and just, like,
yeah,
cause havoc, right?
They definitely were out for revenge, I think. I think the main goal for them was to get their commander.
To kill Peter Cushing, yeah.
Yeah, and then they did that, and they were like, we might as well finish off these tourists. I mean, we started.
I mean, that's just the cherry on top.
I don't know any of the rules of these zombies.
Not at all.
No.
Nope. Why does light kill them? Like, surely Peter Cushing could have said something like, well, we made these crazy monsters, like, perfect inhuman killing machines. You know, tragically, though, vitamin D deficiency, blah, 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 blah. And, like, it's not even like the sun hurts them. It's that if...
They, like, pickle. Which is weird. It just hurts
only,
their eyes.
Only their eyes.
Like, so it's like... The window to the soul.
Oh,
still no, John, make sense. I'm really not getting on.
No, still doesn't make sense. Oh well.
And it's also like a quite long film. There's a few slumber parties in the hotel. Mm-hmm. There's the slumber party on the boat, and then there's the 2 failed boat escape incidents.
Man.
And then we, at the very end, we go back to Rose in the hotel room. Writing out her story in a journal.
Oh my god, I forgot about
with
this.
The largest penmanship in the history of journal writing.
Yeah, so she's...
4 words per page.
That's it. Yeah, huge. I think it's probably so we can see it on the screen.
Could she not have just been telling a police officer who is just not believing her story?
Yeah, why did she need to write it out?
I don't know. And what happened, what became of the Zombs is what I would like to know. Are they there to
right
this
there.
Day? Shockwaving under the sea. So what is your rating of shockwaves?
I mean, I liked some of those underwater sequences. The zombies were fun. They made no goddamn sense. It made me laugh, and it's got Peter Cushing. Give this a 1.5 out of 4.
I also liked the zombies, even though I didn't understand their rules. They had really cool eyes, or goggles, I guess I would say. Really good posture. They had some really,
really good posture.
They had some really interesting formations.
They retained some of their military
I also really liked Keith, co-captain Keith's luxurious hair.
Yeah, you wouldn't stop talking about it.
So it had so much volume. and it was probably all the salt water from his boating days. I'm going to give it a 1.5 out of 4.
Yeah. Clearly Dead Snow, a much better film, way more fun, better looking zombies, too many intestines for my liking, and some gross out moments, but it at least explained its zombies. And
oh, nobody
held
explained
my
their zombies. Nobody explained their zombies at all.
That's a really good point. What am I talking about? They just kind of appeared. They at least had a bigger... They both had really shitty backstories.
They
Damn.
Had some rules, though. These ones didn't have rules. Just that they liked the water.
And also the snow. I don't know why I like horror movies set in the snow. It's just such a...
I mean, I do appreciate boats, though. You don't get a lot of boaty horrors.
Yeah, we went to two far extremes here. We had... water in multiple forms. We had snowed water and regular water.
Good job, John.
Yeah.
Pulling those comparisons.
Totally.
We want to hear your opinion if you saw both of these films. Tweet at us at NOFS Podcast, or you can head over to our Facebook group. That is facebook.com/groups/horrorfiendsofNOFS.
We're going to stick around for a few more minutes and play a game that I've put together called Where in the World is Zombie San Diego? We're going to visit some exotic locations where zombies have appeared and murdered multiple people.
And I'm going to do a great job of it.
Oh, such a great job.
So good.
I made a multiple choice this time, so you've got a fighting chance in this one.
Yeah. Yeah, I sure do. If you'd like to hear that and all of our other bonus content, we are recording a drive home from the drive-in of Overlord. The theme, the loose theme of this week's episode was zombie horror, zombie Nazi horror, and such is Overlord. So if you want to hear that review and this bonus episode and all of the other extra content, head to patreon.com/nightmareonfilmstreet.
But that's it for us this week. I'm John.
Kim.
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive. Just long enough to tell the tale of the nightmare on Film Street. Ow! Help us grow the horde. Leave a review on iTunes or wherever you subscribe. Continue this week's conversation on Twitter by following at NOFS Podcast. And as always, more terror can be found lurking on our website, www.nightmareonfilmstreetpodcast.com. Until next week, stay creepy, fiends.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.